Welcome to the AlphaVille Journal of Film and Screen Media podcast. Episode 5 for issue 23, Screening the Artist. This podcast is presented by the co-editors of this issue on Screening the Artist, Dr. Sage Walton, Senior Lecturer and Associate Director of the Creative People, Products and Places Research Centre at the University of South Australia, and Lucio Crispino, Lecturer at the School of Creative Industries, also at the University of South Australia. Thanks for tuning in.
Hello, my name is Sage Walton.
Hello, my name is Lucio Crispino.
And we are the guest editors of issue 23 of AlphaVille, and we're here to talk to you about this special themed issue on screening the artist.
So we thought a good place to start in terms of introducing the issue to you would be to talk about some of the different sources of inspiration behind the central theme, screening the artist. And also the idea of the artist's kind of presence, which informs our editorial. So, Lucio, do you?
Yes, I'd be happy to. I guess from my point of view, the primary inspiration was, a couple of exhibitions held in 2009, 2010. One of which I got to see, fortunately. The other one I just missed out on. The first one was at the Royal Academy in London, and it was an exhibition featuring paintings, drawings, and letters by Vincent van Gogh. And it was arranged in chronological order so that you followed his life through these various works and artifacts. And it was very sort of linear as a result of that sort of simple chronological way of structuring it. And it's a classical format for, I guess, evoking the artist and their presence, constructing it, you might say, out of things that were made by or owned by the artist. And what this made me think about was the idea of, well, you know, what is presence? What is the artist's presence really? And it seemed to me that it's a construct. It's something that comes about as via a constellation of elements, some of which, you know, were contained in the space that I've just described, but some of which are beyond the bounds of that space. All the pre-publicity and pre-advertising, for instance, I think formed part of it. The reviews and articles written about it formed part of it. The gift shop at the end formed part of it. And so all of these things contribute to this idea of presence or this sense of presence. Some of them are odd because they seem to contradict this idea of the presence of Van Gogh, this kind of a sacred cow of art history, a little finger puppets in the gift shop as you exit seem to sort of work against this high art model that we see inside the space. The second exhibition was at MoMA in New York, and it was Marina Abramovich's The Artist is Present. And this worked, you know, in a similar way in that it worked through a constellation of factors, not just the exhibition itself, but as we detail in our introduction, the way it was invigilated, the way that it was pre-publicized, and again, the catalogue, which amusingly contains a CD with Marina Abramovich guiding you through some of her favourite parts of the exhibition, the catalogue. So that's what was similar and different about these two shows, but they really brought to the fore this notion of what is presence, what is the mythology behind presence, how is it constructed, how does it work?
I guess in terms of me, I come from a background also in art history. A lot of my research explores the intersections between art history or different aesthetic movements and film. So I've always been kind of interested, I guess, in this kind of intermedial aesthetic. Something else that I work on, or I have worked on, is kind of the reactivation of particular aesthetic movements like the Baroque in terms of film. So that kind of re-presencing of an aesthetic has always been of interest to me. But the other source of inspiration for the theme of this issue comes from an experimental film and media subject that Lucio and I teach at our university, in which we're dealing with a range of practitioners who very much consider themselves to be artist filmmakers. So here I'm thinking of like key figures in the American avant-garde, people like Jonas Mekas and Maya Darren, who did consider themselves to be artists. I mean, certainly Darren very much considered cinema to be an art form and the filmmaker to be an artist. So what interested me about this, particularly in terms of the more experimental strain, was that oftentimes when we talk about the artist on screen, or we're dealing with this idea of the figure of the artist in film, it tends to be presented to us through documentary, so attempts to capture the artist and their artistic process kind of in the moment, or alternatively as in the tradition of the artist biopic. And kind of, I guess, with the experimental material that we were dealing with, neither of the, that didn't fall into those particular categories. So what I was really interested in exploring is, well, what happens when we take those categories away? How are gestures of art making or the presencing of an artist on film figured when we're not dealing with the documentary or we're not dealing with the artist biopic?
Well, this seems to be the right time, the appropriate time to jump in and talk about the articles and some of the themes that connect them. One of the connections between the first two articles, one of which is by Usage, was an emphasis on hands and gesture. And it was not planned. It's something that just came out. Do you want to speak to that, Sage?
Yeah, well, let's talk to perhaps the opening article, which is by Chris and Martine, which is on Jean-Luc Godard's The Image Book, which they read as an exercise in what they call thinking with one's hands. And throughout the article, they highlight, I guess, Godard's various philosophical influences to kind of make a reading of the film that centers around the gestures of the hands. And what they draw out is, by concentrating on particular gestures of the hands, is how these gestures are not just philosophical, but also political for Godard, in that they're deeply kind of connected to some of the political themes in his later work. And so one of the ones that I wanted to kind of, I guess, focus on, and they do a very beautiful kind of reading of the different gestures of the hands that appear in his film, which, as you know, is a really densely laden kind of assemblage of works with references to particular paintings as well as films, including Godard's own films. But the one that they kind of, I guess, foreground is the third kind of gestural image we see in the film, which is the kind of the filmmaker's hands at the Steinbeck table, which is, it could be an image of Woody Allen's hands at the Steinbeck table. It could be Godard. It's actually a still taken from Godard's King Lear. But their argument is that kind of it doesn't matter whose hands feature here. It is about the hands kind of performing a political gesture of assemblage. And so for Chris and Martine, in terms of their reading of the film, it's Godard, and particularly late Godard, piecing together these different fragments in order to make a political gesture or commentary, which in their reading is also very much about Godard in some ways critiquing his own earlier work or assemblage, or I guess his kind of auteurist presence in film, or how he approached filmmaking, but also critiquing a Western or Occidental way of seeing the world through his piecing together of images, sounds, film fragments, artworks, and so on. So it's a wonderful opening to the issue.
Mm. Well, and it's followed by your piece. And as I mentioned earlier on, there are connections in terms of the theme of hands and gestures. How does that play out in your article, Sage?
So this was completely unintentional as well, that I was also foregrounding the presence of the hands in the work of two particular filmmakers, Maya Darren and Marie Menken, who many kind of listeners would know, listeners and readers would know. Darren, of course, Marie Menken is perhaps less well known. So I came to know her work through teaching Maya Darren in this experimental film subject. And I came across this reference to Menken, whose work I hadn't seen before. And then it kind of came to my attention that Menken had been involved or a collaborator on Darren's film At Land, and that she'd also worked on The Very Eye of Night, and that they were part of the same kind of circle, post-war circle of experimental filmmaking. And so one of the things that kind of fascinated me, I guess, was this idea of these two female experimental filmmakers, both foregrounding kind of the gestures of the hands in quite different ways, right? So Menken was known for this kind of free-form approach to handheld camera work. And through my kind of, you know, I guess spending time with At Land and also Darren's own kind of writings on her practice, I mean, we know that editing is such an important kind of thing for Darren in terms of match on action editing. But when I went back and revisited At Land, how kind of important the gestures of the hands were to that film in terms of its ability to traverse space, time, and environment. So I too wanted to kind of explore the importance of the hands for these two filmmakers. And in order to do that, I kind of was inspired by the work of Flusser and Flusser on gesture, who Martin and Chris also mention in their article as well on Goddard, but in a different way. I was really interested in how kind of mediated gestures, this idea of mediated gestures and how it kind of played out in different ways for these kind of these two women, Marie Menken and Maya Darren. And of course, I mean, the other thing that I was really interested in exploring is how kind of gestures of the hands were so kind of such a part of the aesthetic scene in the period in which these filmmakers were working in against the backdrop of abstract expressionism and the kind of gestures of the artists that were associated with that art movement as well, but how these two filmmakers seem to be doing something very different, which was foregrounding gesture at the same time as they were trying to de-emphasize the presence of the filmmaker or the subjectivity of the filmmaker being the kind of driving impetus of their work. So what I put forward in the article is this idea of that they're radical in that they are putting forth a kind of de-subjectified gestural cinema.
There are also some links which we've identified between the first two pieces in this collection and the last piece, Sarah's piece, and that these links are to do with Flusser and his theorization of gesture. How does Sarah apply this to the material that she's working with?
Okay, so Sarah... Sarah's contribution is our last article in this issue. So she's dealing with her contemporary work, actually two contemporary video artists, Bo Wang and Pan Lu, and a specific work of theirs, Miasma Plants Export Paintings from 2017. And so like with, I guess, Martine and Chris's reading of the image book, Goddard's The Image Book, this can also be considered a dense work. It's an assemblage of historic and contemporary materials that's being used to make a political commentary about British colonialism and also kind of, I guess, the relationship between British collectors and Chinese art or Chinese artists. So Sarah also kind of makes use of Flusser's work on gesture to read this work. She's more specifically concerned with Flusser's work on video gestures. And she brings that into a dialogue with Walter Mignolo's discussion of decolonial gesture, brings those two things together in order to read this particular work, or the artistic gestures, should I say, of Bo Wang and Pan Lu in terms of their construction of this work. So what's really important, I guess, and the crux of Sarah's reading is about the history of botanical paintings by Chinese artists as these were collected in Britain. And through her reading of the work, she details how these particular paintings all were connected to the Botanic Gardens, the Kew Gardens in London. And that what Wang and Lu do is to kind of foreground this imagery, and I guess it's kind of the collecting practice of kind of amassing this art or showcasing this art while erasing the presence of the Chinese artist who was behind it. And Sarah's piece, which is really kind of beautifully detailed, looks at the particular form of this split screen installation or kind of film essay, which is also how it's kind of been received, and how what's placed on kind of one side, which might be these kind of these Chinese botanical works, isn't accompanied on the other side in terms of the split screen by an image of the artist. Rather, Bo and Wang do things to juxtaposing Chinese botanical art with more contemporary footage of Chinese artists at work or actual footage of the plants themselves in order to articulate a non-Western way of perceiving the world and also kind of documenting it through art, which I think is really interesting. Okay, so let's take a different critical approach to this idea of screening the artist and look at our third contribution in this issue, which is by Elena Del Rio, who is looking at the works, a number of different works actually, by one artist, Bill Viola, who many of our listeners and readers would probably be familiar with. So, Lucio, do you want to talk to Elena's piece?
Yes, certainly. Yeah, I agree. Viola seems to be everywhere, has been for quite some time. So, yes, he's going to be far more familiar. However, I think that Elena wants us to understand him better, and in particular, the way in which presence works in his pieces. And you're right, she does use a number of works from different periods, from quite early on to more recent work, and she broadly defines these works as works from his early formalist period and later works that deal more or seem to be more interested in the notion of affect and affectivity, which he connects to this notion of the trans-individual, which I'll come back to in a moment. I think that the really important thing that she highlights, though, in terms of how presence manifests in his work is not the usual path. The usual path tends to be through the notion of self-portraiture, you know, that or autobiography, that in a sense Bill is telling us something personal about himself. And maybe he adds to this a little bit by linking particular works to particular moments in his own life, the death of his mother and that sort of thing. But Elena usefully sees Viola as a philosophical artist with a philosophical practice, which is very true. And she brings in the philosopher Simondon to help her explicate what she thinks is going on in terms of individuation and mediation and immediacy within Viola's work. Simondon had this sort of a tripartite model of individuation where he talks about the pre-individual, which is about all sort of the potentials for individuation, then individuation, which is this kind of slightly wobbly attempt to cohere as a subjectivity, as an individual, and then this much, much larger notion of the trans-individual, which is a more sort of communal notion of the individual as such, or individuation, that it sort of begins to sort of break down and one is immersed in the a broader sense of self that involves other people, that includes other individuals. And she brings this to bear on Viola's later work, and not just in terms of how he is immersed or embedded in this technology and how there's a breakdown or a dissolution of the line between the human and the technological, but also in terms of how a viewer or spectator receives this particular work, how we engage with it. And what's fascinating is that she connects it to this notion of immersion and the ultimate symbol of immersion, I guess, in Viola's work, which is that of water. So there's a strong elemental aspect to the way that this is treated aesthetically in his work. And so this notion of presence is far more about a kind of opening up of Bill Viola's presence to other forces, some of them technological and some of them to do with the viewing situation, so that we sort of connect with it very specifically in a different way.
All right, so let's move on from Elena's piece, which is concerned with using the philosophy of Simon Don to approach Bill Viola's presence in his work as one element, I guess, in a larger whole, an element that exists alongside the human and the non-human. So there's a kind of horizontalization of the artist's presence within the work alongside other things. So it's a good point to move on to Nikolai's piece, which is also concerned with a particular artist, but in perhaps a way that we might not normally expect. Lucio, do you want to talk to Nikolai's piece?
Yes. Nikolai is writing about Straub and Ouellet's film A Visit to the Louvre from 2003. It's the second of their two films about Cézanne. And this element, this notion of the elemental applies across Nikolai's article, in as much as this fire force is what underlies or underpins appearances, and it's what I guess the film is claiming was Cézanne's major interest, to go beyond appearances, to go beyond representation. And this is interesting because, as Nikolai says, this film is a portrait of Cézanne, but it's a non-representational portrait. So in what sense then is he a presence in this film, and what's the relationship between that presence and this sort of more elemental fire force? Well, firstly, it's part and parcel of what Straub and Ouellet present as Cézanne's aesthetic and his metaphysics, which is what's being made tangible in this film. It's not necessarily, it doesn't represent him, doesn't represent any of his works, where he worked, any of the usual things that we consider to be biographical information about an artist. Here, the notion of biography is tied more to an artistic quest. What was Cézanne, in his own words, really seeking? And Straub and Ouellet present this in a very sort of material way, where it's very tangible through the use of voices, through the way that images are presented. And Nikolai develops his argument through, I guess, probably the two philosophers who are most essential in terms of trying to understand this notion of going beyond appearances to more elemental forces, Merleau-Ponty and Deleuze. And he puts a very convincing argument for a film that presences an artist without giving them a physical presence within the film.
So I guess that brings us to
the end.
Our conclusion to the issue. I don't know if we have a particular conclusion.
No, we can conclude, though.
Yeah.
About what was done, what was achieved.
Yeah. I think one of the things that I appreciated most as an editor of this special issue were that all of our contributors actually focused their kind of interpretation of screening the artist in particular works.
Oh, absolutely, and very different works, using very different thinkers to support their arguments.
Yep, they followed the rules of, like, you know, you're not allowed to deal with documentary and you're not allowed to deal with artist biopics, and so that they all kind of willingly ran with that, but also produced, I think, some really beautifully attentive, close, detailed readings of particular works in order to illuminate the presence of the artist or gestures of art making in different ways, but some that shared certain commonalities. So we've talked about kind of the importance of the hands, or thinking through the hands, the gestures of the hands. Gesture is a recurring theme in the issue. I think also kind of philosophy is another kind of recurring theme in the issue as well. There's very different kind of film philosophical takes on what the artist might mean in film.
And I think what's great is that although there are these sort of thematic connections, there's no repetition. There's no overlap in terms of content or perspective. There's incredible diversity here. And rereading the articles recently, there's a real perfectionism about the readings as well, how detailed people have been, as you were saying, but also how precise they've been.
Yeah, and that was something else that we had gone into editing this issue hoping would happen, that, you know, we would be able to combine kind of a rigorous kind of analysis or kind of, I guess, foreground formalist analyses in ways that were not about privileging necessarily the artist as subject or matters of biography, but instead looking at how the artist might actually manifest through form and through the work. And I've been really kind of, you know, it's generated, I think, some really exciting scholarship. And I think also, you know, in doing that, actually, it's become evident how kind of there is a kind of politics actually embedded in the form of the work,
sure.
In ways that might not necessarily be explicitly signaled, but it's there in all of it. It's there, I guess, in my reading in terms of Mencken and Doren working against the backdrop of abstract expressionism in their use of gesture. It's there in Sarah Cooper's kind of reading of the importance of the split screen and the dual kind of form of the work as kind of being a means by which to manifest.
In Goddard's piece with his own reflection on his politics.
Well, that's how, Chris and Martin read it as well, as Goddard kind of revisiting his own past, his own filmmaking, and its failures, actually.
Nicolai's piece about the Cezannean revolution applies more broadly to a sort of a politics of revolution.
Yeah, so for Nicolai, you're right, like the Fire Force has also a political edge to it that he traces through a number of thinkers.
I think what we can say just to conclude is that all the surprises that we got upon reading everyone's pieces were good. That there were no bad surprises. And I think given such a diversity of people, there was always a danger that something might go wrong. And to be perfectly honest, I don't think anything went wrong. This issue coheres, I think, as a piece on its own. And each piece within it stands up as a piece on its own. And I think if that's all we've achieved, we've achieved quite a bit. But I think through the contributions of our various wonderful contributors, we've achieved maybe a little bit more than that. And I think we should thank them all.
Yes, thank you everyone who is in this. Thank you also to the Alphaville team, to Laura Rascaroli, and also to all our wonderful peer reviewers who gave of their time in terms of giving feedback on these pieces. We're very proud of this issue. We hope that you enjoy it as well.
Yes, and my final thanks to everyone for their generosity, because I think all these things are driven by people's generosity and willing to give, and we were very grateful for what we were given.
You've been listening to a conversation between the co-editors of issue 23 of Alphaville Journal of Film and Screen Media, Dr. Sage Walton and Lucio Crispino. This podcast is produced with each new issue of the Alphaville Journal of Film and Screen Media. Alphaville is a fully peer-reviewed, open-access online journal edited and published by staff, PhD and postdoctoral researchers in film and screen media at University College Cork, Ireland. This podcast, along with every back issue of Alphaville, can be found at alphavillejournal.com. Thank you to all our contributors, and thank you for listening.